Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is brought to you by High Echelon. High Echelon PC is a nationwide CPA firm based in Atlanta focused on a great client experience. High Echelon provides top quality work with total transparency so clients always know exactly what they're getting. They believe accounting doesn't need to be complicated and that clients should get the experience they deserve, which includes top-notch accounting, tax, and payroll services, timely communication, complete data flow, and the best automation security. Book a call or drop them a line on their website, highecheloncpa.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Blue Pineapple Travel. Blue Pineapple Travel is an agency of experienced travel advisors who help you design the perfect trip. Blue Pineapple Travel advisors are all well-traveled and knowledgeable, and they will be your advocates from start to finish. They love to help people plan their travel, whether it's for a race, a family trip, a weekend getaway, or the trip of a lifetime. Their goal is to match you with the trip that you want. Relaxation or adventure, traveling solo or with a group, inside the U.S. or abroad, Blue Pineapple Travel can plan exactly the trip that you want. Find them online at BluePineappleTravel.com and see some of the great places that folks who have worked with Blue Pineapple Travel go on their Instagram, at Blue Pineapple Travel. MPE Coaching is the coaching arm of the podcast. If you like what you hear here and you need help preparing for a big goal, reach out to us at PleasantPodcast@gmail.com or MPEcoach@gmail.com. Trail races, marathons, triathlons, multi-day relays, we have helped people get ready for all of these things. Our approach is rooted in proven exercise physiology, but we also bring our own experience as coaches and athletes to bear. We specialize in helping adults with busy schedules find ways to build fitness and accomplish their goals. Whether you're looking to complete your first multi-sport race, qualify for Boston or Kona, set a new marathon PR, or simply become a healthier, happier athlete, we can help. Click on the coaching link on the podcast website, www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. The Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast is also brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center. Elemental Altitude is Atlanta's only altitude training facility. At Elemental Altitude state-of-the-art indoor training center, they are capable of simulating elevation of up to 24,000 feet. Training in the thinner air and lack of oxygen prompts an increase in red blood cells, meaning that more oxygen can be delivered to your working muscles on race day. Athletes undertaking all sorts of goals, from rugged mountain climbs to flat sea level marathons to Ironman triathlons, train in the hypoxic environment created at Elemental Altitude. I trained there several times ahead of my successful race at the London Marathon in 2022. And Michelle trained there extensively for the Silver Rush 50 in 2023, her first ever 50-mile race that spent a lot of time over 10,000 feet. In addition, Elemental Altitude hosts a variety of physiological testing, such as sweat testing, blood lactate testing, VO2 max testing, and a variety of metabolic testing, which can tell you your resting metabolic rate and the types and amounts of fuels you are burning at different training and racing intensities. Drop them a line at info@elementalaltitude.com if you have questions or to set up an appointment. Their website is elementalaltitude.com. And finally, our new sponsor for 2024 is Bright Hair. Bright Hair is a creative design studio offering branding, graphic design, marketing, and website design and support. They designed our Most Pleasant Exhaustion logo, and they are helping to build our website right now. The folks at Bright Hair are patient and thorough, and they listen to your feedback. Their expertise has been critical to our getting our branded merchandise shop off the ground in early 2024. Be sure to reach out to them with any graphic design or marketing needs that you have. You can find them at brighthair.com. That's bright, B-R-I-G-H-T, hair, H-A-R-E.com, or on Instagram at bright.hair. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast possible. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast, brought to you by Elemental Altitude Training Center, Bright Hair, High Echelon PC, MPE Coaching, and Blue Pineapple Travel. My name is George Darden. I'm an endurance athlete and coach here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a father of twin boys and I'm a college professor.
My name is Michelle Frank. I'm also an endurance athlete in Atlanta, Georgia. I am a mom to three girls and a CPA.
And my name's Eric Hall. I'm an endurance athlete. And if I coach others like I coach myself, they should all just drop me. But I'm also the father to three baby adults and the husband to a beautiful and amazing birthday girl wife, Melissa.
Birthday girl, no doubt. Very good. So I look forward to hearing about this coaching other people the way you coach yourself thing, particularly given the fact that I always delineate between George the athlete and George the coach. But before we do that, I want to draw attention to something that no one can see, and that is the sweatshirt that Michelle is wearing as we are recording this podcast today. Michelle, describe what you're wearing.
I'm wearing a casual gray backline crew neck sweatshirt that has a MPE logo on it.
Yeah, it
as
does.
Part of our kind of winter capsule, so to speak, that we just did with them. So yeah,
it looks
it's
good.
Very comfortable. It's a unisex shirt, so sizing's always a little bit kind of iffy. I went with a small. I'm really glad I did. I think a medium would have probably swallowed me. So I was pretty excited to get it in the mail. It's super comfortable. Haven't washed it yet, which I usually do, but I was so excited that I just put it on. So, yeah.
When did you get it? Because I got a shipping confirmation for the same sweatshirt and for a windbreaker as well. And I'm thinking it's going to arrive like today, tomorrow. It's got to be pretty soon. I'm tracking it obsessively, but.
Well, we're recording on Wednesday. I got it late Monday, like one of those 8 p.m. mail trucks.
Mm.
Put it on yesterday morning, but I'm sure we'll get to this. I got sick yesterday, so I quickly took it off once I realized where I was going to spend most of the day. So I put it back on this morning. So I'm going to consider today the first day wearing it, even though it came on Monday. So
gotcha. Very good. You say you're feeling sick. Are you okay?
I mean, I'm fine now. I unfortunately am the victim of, I don't know, whatever you call it, the stomach bug or norovirus, to be really correct. It turns out my 9-year-old was one of six girls in her class who all hung out together all day Saturday. And one of the girls apparently had woken up in the middle of the night and kind of just puked her brains out, but she didn't tell her parents. And I actually really thought it was food poisoning originally because it was all the kids all at one house and they all ate the same food. But despite masking and putting on gloves and everything, Alana was sick for several hours and into the night Monday. So obviously wasn't careful enough and was like, I think I'm getting sick, but I quickly thought I could get in my easy run for the day. So I quickly went to the treadmill and after about 35 minutes, barely made it, showered and really spent the rest of the day mostly on the bathroom floor. My bathroom happens to be very nice. It's not a horrible place to be, but it was pretty rough. So
I'll take your word for it. Setting up a bed on the bathroom floor does not sound all that great, but that was just over 24 hours ago. So it kind of feels like it sort of blew through and you're good now.
I mean, I feel good. I showered this morning. I was on two work calls before we podcasted and
you felt confident enough to put your sweatshirt back on.
Yeah, exactly. this is actually the first time I've ever been victim to this. I've been a mom for 17 and a half years, so I will consider that somewhat victorious on my part, but I definitely just underestimated the contagion. But yeah, one day of me being out of commission is a lot for my household. So I think everyone's glad that I'm functioning again.
Absolutely. We're glad you're functioning again. We had originally planned to record yesterday and
yeah,
we
that
decided
was
that
not
you staying
happening.
on your bathroom floor was probably a better idea. So glad you're feeling good enough today that we can actually get together and record and talk about a few different things that we'll be getting into here over the course of the next few minutes. Eric, you said you were a bad coach for yourself. What stupid thing did you do this time?
Oh, how much do I appreciate that? I definitely appreciate that this time tacked on to the end of that. So I did a really good thing first, and I'm really pushing myself to, as we've talked about, cheese check-in, doing really well.
Good, good.
And Melissa and I watched another Netflix series that scared me away from even considering eating meat products ever for the rest of my life.
Really?
But all I know is that when you see a large scale beef facility,
for sure,
it turns you off. When you read what the greenhouse gas emissions from just the beef industry are and how that compares to the entire world's transportation industry, greenhouse gas impact, it's astounding. So anyway, side of
agreed.
The point, trying
no,
to do really
but,
well.
But on that side point though, you remember when we had Lauren Fogarty and my wife, Casey, come on the podcast a few years ago and talked about being vegan. Michelle was kind of blown away by the idea that eating less meat or eating no meat or animal products at all, like Lauren does, was actually an environmental decision.
Right.
And indeed, a lot of sources say that the greatest environmental impact, positive environmental impact that we can potentially have as human beings on our planet, is to simply eat less meat.
I
not
mean, I
cut it
think
out
that's,
entirely, but just eat less.
yeah, that was mostly Casey's reasoning. And I
That
don't
was
think I,
entirely Casey's reasoning.
yeah, and I don't think I'd ever seen it from that like vantage point before. And of everything I've ever heard in my short 42 years of life, people choosing to be like vegan or vegetarian, that was probably the most impactful, like insightful thing, I feel like.
Right on.
Yeah.
She's a
way,
smart
way
lady.
more than, way more than like, I don't know. I don't want to say more than animal cruelty or all these other reasons, but that was like, oh, this could like really have a beneficial impact to like our whole world.
Yeah.
But
Clearly
yeah.
She thought so too. Clearly Eric thinks so too, right?
Well, I it's definitely a compelling argument. This series was about twins. They took identical twins and they put one on a vegan diet and they had one on an omnivore diet. Both good diets though. So like both diets that are, and I'm not saying diet in the sense of to lose weight, but a diet in the sense of what they were eating that were beneficial to them as humans. And they also had exercise routines and all that. And then they did an analysis post facto, about 8 weeks, I think it was the time frame. But during that, they're kind of like, they had all these like vignettes, and that was one of them. So, you know, Melissa and I are really pushing ourselves to like get further and further towards the vegan side. But so the cheese chicken, how does these two things tie together? And then why am I stupid?
The name of the documentary, by the way, I just looked it up as you were talking here. It's called You Are What You Eat, A Twin Experiment.
And so, and there's an athletic bent to it too. So I thought that was interesting. But one of the vignettes was about the company, I think it's Miyokos, and they had the founder, and she's one of the companies that's trying to make cheese products. And she said that are vegan. And she said, because the overwhelming argument that people have to a vegan diet is I can't give up cheese. That's like a big one. And when she said that, of course, that's the first thing I said, like, this is something that I do. And I eat a lot of cheese. And, but they had a product, and, you know, one of the things like pizza has always been the struggle. And what Miyoko's came up with is it's basically a pourable cheese. It's almost the consistency of thick milk that you pour on the top of a pizza, and then you cook it, and it actually cooks up like cheese. And I was like, we've got to try this. And so last night, Melissa and I made pizzas, and we used different crust types and stuff, and we made three pizzas. And I'll tell you, I was impressed.
That was actually my biggest problem when I tried being a vegan for a little while, was not cheese, it was yogurt. There was not a good yogurt replacement. And I eat yogurt on a fairly regular basis, be it skyr, like Icelandic yogurt or Greek yogurt or whatever it happens to be. There was not a good one. They were all just kind of gross.
I think cheese, yogurt, and protein, like what's your protein supplement to make up for it? And I think those things are all difficult. So anyway, so where's the stupidity come in? So Monday night, I went downstairs and I did a heck of a strength workout. For the first time in a while, I got back on the belt squat. And I actually upped my weight on the belt squat, and it was comfortable and all that. And the next night, one of our friends,
we know
Alan
it's
Kalpie,
coming.
Yeah. One of our friends, Alan Kalpie, he did a race. And where did he race, George?
On
Zwift.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he raced up Alpe d'Huez, which is, you know, a mimic of Alpe d'Huez. And I was like, wow. And he was talking about how well he did. And I'm like, this is great. And then my boss and good friend and friend of the podcast, Lee Ragsdale, and I talked about it and this, that, and the other, and started looking up, oh, how fast have I done this before? And this, that, and the other. And I got all excited about it. Completely forgot that I had just done a leg workout, basically a pretty serious set of squats. I said, I think I'm going to see how well I can do going up this Alpe d'Huez. I also forgot that my front derailleur is broken, so my bike is stuck in the big ring.
Oh, nice.
So I got about 2/3 of the way up, and I said, and things were already falling apart. And I was like, this is not going to turn out well. And I decided, okay, you have done something dumb. You have not bagged it early enough, and you just need to turn around and get back down the hill now. And so when did I really realize how dumb this was? when I woke up this morning. And I was like, my legs are so trashed.
I hear.
But yeah, so that's, but that's the kind of thing I do. It's probably like it, you know, sometimes maybe it becomes like a positive or something. This one, no, this is a negative. This was very dumb.
I mean, I think it's positive to, like, you see a shiny object and you want to try it, right? I mean, I think that's potentially positive. You know, you also didn't mention that our other friend of the podcast, who we also ride on Zwift with a lot, Brian Hetherington, he set a personal best going up Alpe d'Huez over the weekend too, right? And
that's
so, like,
right.
On
yeah,
that text
the
thread, there's
already.
Been lots of talk about Alpe d'Huez over the course of the past few days, right?
Yeah.
And so there's nothing wrong with being like, they're all like PR and going up Alpe d'Huez. I'm going to try and PR too. It's just, I think you just went after too many shiny objects in a row.
The problem too is my PR is sub 50.
Mm-hmm.
I actually averaged like 4.2 watts per kg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the back of my head. So when
sure.
I start at the bottom, I'm like, all right, let's see how long I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, yeah. I'm not in shape for that, especially not after a leg workout. This is
yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm an idiot of a coach. And you guys will both say, well, you just need to get a coach. Yeah, not now.
Yeah.
That's not gonna work out for me right now.
That's okay, buddy. That's okay. We're not going to give you too hard of a time.
If I had a good friend who would just like coach me on the side, maybe, but you know, I don't have any of them.
Can't imagine any such friend. Can't imagine. Speaking though of coaching, let me give a shout out to an athlete that I coach, Brian Wells, an athlete that I coach who lives here in Atlanta. He's a doctor. He ran his second marathon ever at the Combos Albany Marathon this past weekend, which is down in Albany, Georgia. It's flat. The weather can be a little bit iffy, and it was a little bit iffy actually over the course of the weekend. But his goal was to run under 3:15. His Boston qualifying time is 3:20. And he ran right in the mid 3:14s, as a matter of fact. So went 5.5 minutes under the Boston qualifying time, which will hopefully be enough to get him into the Boston Marathon in 2025. So big shout out to Brian
That's
Wells.
Awesome.
He's recovering this week and is going to start then getting ready for a couple of triathlons this summer and then the Berlin Marathon in September. So exciting time. Congrats to Brian.
Does Brian listen to our podcast?
So Brian just started listening to our podcast over the course of the past few weeks, as a matter of fact. So
that's the correct answer.
So I mentioned to Brian that I would be giving him a shout out on the podcast. And it was funny. I was talking to him on Monday. And he, of course, had run the race on Saturday. And this had been his goal all along, was running under 3:15, qualifying for Boston. And everything had been pointed towards that and geared towards that and that sort of thing. And he had done a great job. He not only did a great job in training, like getting ready for the race, and nailing all of his workouts, and being consistent and resting when he needed to rest and paying attention to the details and all that sort of thing, but he also just did a brilliant job during the race of executing a strong, solid, smart race. I was psyched for him and proud of him. But on Monday we're talking, he goes, "So this is the day that you ask for a raise." he said, I'm more likely to give you a raise now and pay you more now than I would be at any other time. And I was like, fair. I said, I'm not going to ask for a raise, but I will give you a shout out on the podcast.
That's awesome. Well done.
Yeah.
He very
should
good.
Be happy.
To both of you. Just 15% to George and the rest of it.
And the rest of Brian. Indeed.
Yeah, Brian.
Does
Brian
ahead.
Know that there's a weekly quiz in his Training Peaks about what we talked about on the podcast? Have you started that with him?
And if he doesn't pass, then if he doesn't do well, he has to run on Monday, which is usually the day off.
I'm just
That's
kidding,
right.
Brian.
Which, you know, he does often run on Mondays. So there you go. He swims often on Mondays as well. He has actually a swimming background. So, I probably shouldn't point him to too many of the podcasts in the past where I trash swimming and probably should avoid trashing swimming right now. But yeah, he has a swimming background. He's a great swimmer. And that aerobic engine that he built over the course of many, many years in the pool, he is definitely bringing on to the road now. Speaking of races, this weekend is Peyton's Wild and Wacky 10x5K. And at one time, or we were all signed up to do it. Michelle signed up to do it. Eric signed up to do it as part of a team. I signed up to do it. And then over time, including all the way up through yesterday, we all kind of gradually said, you know what, we're not going to do it. So I think Michelle was the first to say, I'm out. I'm not going to be doing it. And then I decided last week that just where I am right now with my comrades build, I didn't want to pause in my build in order to not only taper a little bit for the race, but also more importantly, recover from the race afterwards. I just kind of wanted to keep on training. And then Eric, you made the decision not to run too, right?
That is correct. Yeah. We had a talk over the weekend, Melissa, Grace, and I, and it's just not going to work out. There's a confluence of things going on, all not really related to running, except for the fact that Grace is running 100-miler later in the month. And we know that she does not know how to go and run easy once the gun goes off. So, but yeah, there's a confluence of events.
No, and that's real. Like, in talking to my coach about it, my coach said to me, I mean, you could go and jog through it. You could go and do zone two. And I said, no, I've won this race in the past. Like, I don't want to go jog through a race where they're going to be timing me and my name's going to appear in the results. And so jogging through it was not something that was really on my calendar. And so given that, yeah, I decided just to drop out entirely. I sent the email and said, give my number to somebody else, please. Love you all. See you again some other year. But I'm going to spend the weekend training instead. Which is going well. So we are now truly into the comrades build. I ran up and down the mountain next to my house, Kennesaw Mountain, 3 times over the weekend, which is not something I've ever done before in a single run. Trying to get more elevation gain, did a workout yesterday at elemental altitude. So our friend Chuck there, and had a sort of a moderate hill repeat workout to do that I was instructed to do on the treadmill. And I said, well, if I'm going to be on the treadmill anyway, might as well go and do it at 10,000 feet. And so I went up to elemental altitude and did it there. And it was good, of course, to catch up with Chuck and talk to him about everything that's going on in his life and everything that's going on elemental altitude. We'll definitely circle back around with him. I started reading race reports, started thinking a lot more about logistics, still trying to figure out exactly what shoes I'm going to wear, even though I think I know. And also trying to figure out how to actually somehow get a U.S. flag on my front. So I'm going to have my Most Pleasant Exhaustion singlet on. I'm going to have my bib number, obviously, but I've heard in race reports that if you have a flag of the country that you're representing and you're not from South Africa, that people tend to really enthusiastically cheer for you. I'm trying to figure out some way to pin a U.S. flag somehow on
very
my front.
Cool.
So, yeah. So any ideas that either of you or any of our listeners have about that, do be sure to let me know.
I'm sure there's a way to use whatever those things are where people don't safety pin their bibs.
Like the magnets?
Yeah, some form of like a small flag. Like you could get like a flag from the dollar store that doesn't weigh anything and just put it on.
Honestly, that's probably what I'm going to do.
And it's not covering your number, but it's there, invisible.
Yeah. I'm thinking that is, but you know, like the little ones that you can hold and wave, you know?
Just take it off the stick.
Yeah, just take it off the stick and pin it to my front is actually kind of where I'm leaning right now.
What are the shoe choices?
So the shoe choice, there's really and truly one choice. I just need to come to grips with it. And that's Deviate Nitro. I mean, a 56-mile race on the road that never goes up and down. Deviate Nitros they're my favorite trainer. They're my go-to trainer over the course of the past several years, as everybody who listens to this podcast knows. They will undoubtedly work for me well. But there's something about being in a race that makes me feel as if I need a race shoe.
I mean, that shoe does have a plate, George. Like before they had an actual quote super shoe, that was their plated shoe. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm sure that's what I'm ultimately going to wear. And I like these shoes. I mean, I just literally just now ordered 4 more pairs of the version 1 of the Deviate Nitro.
You guys cracked me up.
That's what I'm saying. I just received the 4 pairs. Yeah. And okay. So I will have a new-ish pair that I probably only have, you know, 10, 20 miles on, something like that, when I actually tow the starting line there on June 9th. But yeah, like I said, there's just a part of me that feels like it's a race, and so I need something racier. Not the trainer that I use for all my easy runs. I just need to get out of that way of thinking, for a 56-mile race, you know?
A 56-mile race and running in those shoes, I feel like you have the proof that your Achilles will likely stay intact.
Yep.
So you just have everything else to worry about. But keeping your Achilles healthy is definitely a big piece of the puzzle for you.
Agreed. Agreed. 100%. Yeah. And I totally agree. You know, the only other thing that I would consider, I really like the Saucony Endorphin Speed. And I've had two pairs. I'm currently on my second pair, but both of them are version one. And I can wear that shoe for about a half marathon. And then somewhere around 18, 19 miles, my feet start to hurt. I wore them during the Houston Marathon last year in 2023. And my feet really, really, really hurt at the finish of that race. Something about Endorphin Speeds around mile 18, 19, 20, they just turn into bricks. And it didn't happen when I wore them for more than 40 miles during the Blue Ridge Relay in 2022. But for some reason, running that far uninterrupted, something happens with me and with those shoes that makes them unsuitable. And so certainly I can't imagine trying to go 56 miles in them.
You're not the only one that said that too. I think Brian Hetherington has said the same, hasn't he? Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. He might have. And he actually even had a later version of the shoe. Michelle has said the same thing about the Endorphin Pros for sure. But I think it's going to be the Deviate Nitro. I'm pretty sure about that. I'm confident that they're going to be great. I've begun visualizing the race a whole lot more. I've been watching all the videos a whole lot more. As of right now, I can't watch a video about the race without actually getting emotional. We'll see whether that changes between now and race day. I don't know. We'll find out. All right, let's talk about a couple other quick things here, and then we're going to talk about the main thing we're going to talk about today. We can't let the day go by without talking about the Indoor World Championship, right, Michelle?
That's correct.
So,
I mandated that.
In Indoor World Track Championship was this past weekend in Glasgow, Scotland. Let's just hit a couple quick highlights. What were your favorite parts, Michelle?
Sure. Well, it was like 3 days of just action-packed track, so it's fun because it's all condensed. It's not this like 10-day thing like outdoor track. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, great for the sport is the rivalry between Christian Coleman and Noah Lyles. Obviously, Christian Coleman served a 2-year, I think, whereabouts failure suspension. So he's back now. And they raced in the 60. And, you know, Noah went in saying he's going to win. And obviously, who's really the fastest at 60 meters? I think Christian Coleman's probably going to be the all-time greatest. So Noah looked really tight, like even in the round and the semi. And Christian did win at the end. So that was just kind of fun, just the hype. And I think in many ways, it's good for the sport. It was fun to see Noah. He came back and he ran in the relay. He did great.
In the 4x400 meter relay. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of controversy. Fred Curley threw down on Twitter about how he should be there. So that's, you know, I think whatever, it's good. It's drama. It brings attention. It's fun. I would say like the US really cleaned up in the 1500. I mean, we won silver and bronze, both in the men's and the women's, and those are both just incredible races to watch. In the men's, mostly because Beamish came in and won it from, I swear he was like in lane eight.
He was out of the picture.
Lanes. Mm-hmm. There's not eight lanes on this track, by the way, it's indoor, but he just came around like in lane four and he looks like some high schooler that just had that extra kick in 50 meter. And I think he really surprised Cole Hawker and Hobbs Kessler. Like it's just out of nowhere.
Yeah. With 100 meters to go, the camera was on the front group of about four or five guys, and Hobbs Kessler was in it and Cole Hawker was in it and Jordy Beamish was not in the shot.
Not in the shot. Yeah.
And then he literally picked around them coming off the last curve. Yeah, it was incredible.
So I love them. I love the OAC guys on Athletics Club, and they've got this coffee club podcast, which I think is fun to listen to. So it would have been great to see the US win that, but if they weren't gonna win, this was top in my mind. Mm-hmm. For the women, you saw Emily Mackay at her kind of first big global championship. She just took it. And it looked like she had miscounted laps, but I think she really knew what she was doing. She ended up taking bronze, which is an incredible for, you know, a showing at World Indoors. And Nikki took silver. Again, we didn't win that 1500, but, you know, we brought home four of the six medals, which I think was pretty good. And then, you know, the other thing I would just say worth watching were both the 3Ks. Just really, really, really good running. Josh Kerr's fun to watch. He went home to run on home turf for him. He wasn't planning to, and then kind of decided to go to indoors. So that was a great run for him. And then, of course, you know, from the U.S., like Ellie Puryear St. Pierre's, 364 days since she had had her son. And she just looks awesome now. And she said over and over again, she feels stronger, fitter, faster than before she became a mom. So, you know, some women's return to professional running is a little bit hampered by postpartum stuff, but she and her coach, who's Mark Coogan, seemed to have really nailed it. And she's a world champion now. So that was just awesome to watch.
In the 3,000 meters. Yeah.
3,000.
Yeah. Fun to watch. Good to see a world championship here. And of course, NBC is placing it as part of their buildup towards the 2024 Olympic Games in Paris, which are not all that far away.
It does look like we're getting some really good, maybe different content for athletics or track and field, whatever you want to call it. Maybe a Netflix series. So it'll be kind of exciting to see where all this content, like what it turns into for fans out of Paris.
And so having spent last weekend watching that, what are you spending this weekend watching, Michelle?
So this weekend, I think the attention is going to be on the Lululemon Further race. I think you would call it a race. I think a bunch of women who, you know, either weren't sponsored before or switched their sponsorship last year and became Lululemon athletes. This was kind of the goal from, we've been hearing about this for 14 months. I think the original article was published around this time last year, maybe even January of last year. But they've brought 10 women out, all of, you know, different calibers, different running resumes. They've taken them to, they're right outside of Palm Springs, California. And every one of their athletes, they're all female runners, and they all have different goals over a 6-day period. Ultimately, each one, I think, is trying to, you know, go further, set a personal best, everything to break world records, which is more kind of what Camille Heron and Devin Yanko are going for. So there's basically been an embargo on all of the details surrounding this, except for who the athletes are and what the ultimate goal is. And ultimately, this is really a lot of why they signed with Lululemon. So we've gotten a lot of information. Today's Wednesday, literally in the last 12 hours. I think I took to a forum, you know, 15 hours ago and basically posted, and I said, okay, I have like this whole group of friends. We are the ultimate run nerds. We know nothing about this. Like, where are they? What are they doing? Is there a course? What's the race? And all of a sudden, you know, all the information kind of started pouring in. They've brought every content creator who you might know in the running space or you might not out there. They've got, you know, women's running. So it looks like, I can't even explain it. It looks like the scene of the fanciest Hollywood movie. Like, they all have their own trailers, and they all have vans to sleep in, and they have a chef, and they have, this is all part of a 7-member crew. So it should be fun to see what happens. There's a live tracker. Like, I'm most interested, Camille Heron and Devin Yanker are going after like the overall 6-day world record, which I think there's a little bit of, you know, I don't know. I've seen 658.7. Wikipedia says like the road is 639 miles. The track is 645 and a half. So if anyone knows what that actual record is they're trying to break, that would be awesome. Cause even the people reporting on it are reporting all different numbers.
So what's the strategy here? And Eric, by all means, you know, you have a business degree, and help us understand this. Why would Lululemon announce that there's going to be this event, but keep all the details under wrap until literally like the day the event is starting? Why wouldn't you not like say, here's what the event is and hype it up? If not over the course of months leading up to it, at least like the week leading up to it, what's the strategy behind keeping it a secret?
I
don't think it's financially driven. Michelle, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there could have been this massive like marketing push for this, and it could have been a huge way to sell product and show their commitment to the running space. But I actually think that the science and the research that they're doing behind it, like these women have been back and forth to university labs over the last 12 to 14 months. And what Lululemon is really trying to do in terms of like science and research in the female endurance athlete world is more the priority for this event than actually selling their product. I, like, there's no way that, like, all my I have a few friends. I don't have all my friends, but like I have three friends that work in marketing, and they all feel
I have
like
three
one is.
friends.
I do. That's you guys are two of them, so there's only one more. So all these people listening wondering if it's them. It's all of you. No, I'm just kidding. But I think there's no way that like Lululemon missed the mark on marketing. I think it just really had to be that this is so much more about the science behind it. And what they hope to pull in terms of research, just really being focused on the female endurance athletes. So much of our research and our data, the test pool is male, honestly. You know, maybe that's mostly what was available up until 5 to 10 years ago, but now we have women, especially the longer the distance you go, really, you know, throwing down numbers that aren't really that far off from what the men are doing. So,
or outperforming.
Yeah, or outperforming. So that, It could be they totally missed the mark on marketing and nobody knows. And people are so pissed about this, which is kind of funny. But it just seems to me like Lululemon is pretty like intuitive and kind of knows what they're doing to get the masses to follow or buy their product or run their races.
You would think.
So I don't know.
I think you said this, but they're all wearing the same Lululemon shoes, right?
Yeah, so the shoes are something that Lululemon's tried to get into. They have like a Bliss feel, you know, a road shoe. They do have a trail shoe. They are on the second version, but this shoe is brand new. The first time we saw it was yesterday. So each of these women are wearing the same shoe, but also with that came, I think they said 36 pieces of customized clothing for them. So in terms of everything they've done for like sports bras and a liner to running shorts, one pieces, sun protective gear. The funniest thing I saw was they customized the hydration vest so that you can put ice into the pockets in the back. But I'm just thinking these women aren't going into the mountains for 6 days. They're on like a 2.5 mile loop. So who's wearing a vest on a 2.5 mile loop? But maybe some of it is just product testing, you know, like does this cool you off? It'll be interesting to see of the customized, you know, kits, so to speak, who chooses to wear what. I'm not impressed by the colors. We're seeing like a burnt orange.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's all
tan,
orange.
A tan and like a white. And a lot of these women, the tan color, these clothing look like second skin on them. So, I mean, Lululemon has got every color you could imagine. I just think it's interesting that this is the color choice for this because they're all ugly.
Michelle, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's too much motivation for this to be a marketing thing for them not to market it if that was their purpose. And I think this is so much bigger than that. It removes a lot of the expectation stress on the runners. It takes, you know, all of that fervor out of it. Who cares if they pissed off a bunch of people? Sometimes that's the best marketing possible, right?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the way it feels
smart
to me.
This was okay. I don't want to say it was smart. This was targeted. This was purposeful. This wasn't a mistake.
Yeah, I don't consider myself a cynical person, but I can't quite.
You are a cynical person.
I'm not.
I consider you a cynical person.
No, I am not. But I cannot buy that Lululemon has a purely scientific purpose here, and that's the reason why they didn't release any details. I just cannot go there.
Oh, it's not a purely scientific purpose for this effort. They thought they could get more out of it by not making it a big deal. So they're going to get more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking this is an exact example of the, I will give you one marshmallow now, or I will give you two marshmallows in 10 minutes. Choose. Mm-hmm. They have chosen two marshmallows in 10 minutes.
The marshmallow test is come under scrutiny over the course of the last several years, which we can talk about some other time. I think I hear what you're saying is that they wanted to try and dial down the intensity a little bit for the athletes, and therefore ensure that more of them were going to be able to finish running over the course of 6 days rather than dropping out after a day or two, after three, whatever it happens to be, right? And maybe
whatever
that's the
metric
reason why they didn't do it.
I don't know. Whatever metric they have for getting good data out of this,
mm-hmm.
whatever that metric is, I think they felt like that metric was enhanced by removing this big month-long marketing push.
Okay.
I mean, these women have to go the distance for this whole project to be successful, right? That has to be like, I mean, I guess they don't have to. They probably would say, argue up until now, they have amazing data and this and that. But like, if Camille and Devin are DNFs after 2 days, I mean, what the hell was the point in this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
So we'll see. It's 12 women. Is that right?
It's 10 women, I think.
10 women. And like you said, they're on about a 2.5 mile loop that they'll do as many times as they can over the course of the next 6 days. And so certainly next time that we get together, we'll check in and see. I mean, maybe the strategy will become clear in the follow-up, like how they actually talk about it after it's done.
Yeah.
It'll actually
Agreed.
Become clear. And so we'll have more to talk about next time. But yeah. I'm inclined to think that this was a calculated marketing choice, that they thought that maybe if they kept it under wraps, that it could create this bigger splash. And you know, kind of like Eric said a minute ago, like it could tick a couple of people off. And like, would we be talking about it if it wasn't this sort of weird thing? I don't know.
I think that the mystery behind it is part of the appeal.
Yeah.
Right. Like I've had two people text me and been like, have you tried on those shoes? And I'm like, what part of this shoe was under embargo until 12 hours ago? Do you not understand? Like nobody even saw the shoe. Like we all just saw the picture,
yeah.
You know? But of course it's like, then they're going to bring the shoe to the market and everybody, or maybe some people will, like me, will want to try it on, not necessarily buy it, but you know, anyway.
Very good. Very good. We'll see. Yeah. So of course, good luck to the women that are competing out there in Palm Springs as we speak. And as we put out this podcast here, all right, let's talk about the main thing we actually wanted to talk about today. We have kind of been catching up on things and catching up with one another and that sort of thing. But the main thing we want to talk about today is actually another podcast. And I feel okay actually talking about the other podcast because it was a limited series podcast. We can send people to it and they can listen to it. It's almost like reading a book or listening to an audio book or something else like that. But it was a podcast called The Build Up. And The Build Up was, well, Michelle, tell us what it was.
Sure. So The Build Up was a series over a few months with podcast host Julia Hanlon and professional runner Molly Seidel. And it was just chronicling her journey after she basically had a really successful, I don't want to say return to the marathon at Chicago, but, you know, she'd had kind of a rough 2 years since winning the bronze in Tokyo, ran a stellar race at Chicago, and then, you know, obviously was gearing up and the goal was to make the team for Paris this summer at the trials in Orlando in February.
Right.
So the podcast was like a once-a-month check-in. They're good friends. Julia is, you know, no stranger to like podcasting. She's had a successful podcast kind of on and off in the past. Probably one of the first podcasts I ever listened to, actually. So it's always fun for me when she comes back with a series, and it's, you know, it was even more fun that they kind of teamed up for this. So. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So the name, of course, The Build Up suggests, okay, Molly Seidel building up towards the Olympic trials, right? And
Right.
It was six total episodes. I think they kind of played it by ear, I think, as far as the number of episodes went. Like, for example, in January, for reasons that we'll discuss here in just a minute, Molly said, I can't record. Like, I cannot talk about where I am right now. But then the final episode is the one that we listened to, and it was the finale, where Molly Seidel basically talked about the last month or so she had leading up to the Olympic trials, including the fact that she dropped out of the Olympic trials about a week before the trials race was set to take place in Orlando. She talked about her background there, but then along the way, she told lots of other stories about the way she has grown and the way she has changed ever since she won that bronze medal in the 2020 Olympics, which of course were held in 2021 in Japan. So we're not doing books of the quarter this year, we decided. We talked about this in a couple of our podcasts early on in the year. We have said that basically from time to time, we're going to be talking about books that we're reading. And that will almost certainly include the new Katie Arnold book that's coming out in April called Brief Flashings in the Phenomenal World. But we do from time to time want to talk about what it is we're listening to and what it is we're reading and various things that we've come across in the running space that we thought were interesting and worthwhile. And so this is kind of our first attempt at that. By all means, we encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast, but let's talk about what some of our major takeaways from it actually were. I'll go first.
Sounds right. Good.
And so, you know, she talked a lot about kind of what was going on with her in December and in January leading up to the marathon trials, which were, of course, in February. And she said that in December, her right knee was really, really hurting. And then her left knee was actually really restricted. So both of her knees were in a really bad place. She couldn't even walk up and down stairs, she said. And every time she would, and she'd be like literally sitting down at the tops of stairs and kind of scooting down on her butt down the stairs, she'd be like, oh, well, no, this is just marathon training. I'm in heavy marathon training. This is normal. This is perfectly normal. And she said somewhere along the way, quote, in marathon running, you normalize feeling like shit. And I understand where she's coming from with that. And certainly I do think that there is some fatigue that you kind of expect when you're marathon training or ultra marathon training. But then you couple that with something else she said a few minutes later. She said, quote, I have a real problem of saying when I'm in pain. She said, I don't see myself as a talented runner. I have to be willing to work 10 times harder. She sees herself as what she called a grinder. And she said, that mentality has consistently gotten me injured over the course of my career. This idea that she's got to work harder because she's not talented enough. If she's going to win, she has to push through this pain and push through this injury and thing like that. That really, really stood out to me. She said, this has kind of been a wake-up call for me. If I had just pushed through and made this team, I would have kept doing this and be out of the sport in a couple of years. This is a mindset that I'm familiar with because it's my mindset as well. and I dare say it might be Eric's mindset as well, but we'll hear from him about that here in just a minute. As I've gotten older, I've been willing to admit that I do in fact have some talent for distance running. But early in my career, I very much felt that the people that I was competing against were more talented than I was, and I had to work harder and I had to grind things out. And that meant that I had to suffer through things and swallow things and push harder and endure more pain than they did. So hearing her talk about that and trying to modify that self-concept because she thought it was destructive, that stood out to me. What do you think, Michelle?
I think I was so much more focused on, wow, like she really tried every which way after she finally shut things down to get healthy again and at least give it a go for February.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little frustrating when, you know, just as, I don't know, as like a fan of the sport, when an athlete is, you know, this injured, and, you know, she's under like the coaching auspices of somebody who arguably has been by her side, you know, since the moment she really even started getting into, you know, trying a half marathon, going to the trials. This is her coach, John Green. And I just, you know, it's hard to understand like how November and December happened. Like, how could she hide so much of this and still do some of the things? And this is just, you know, what her Strava says she did, so to speak. So I feel like there's a little bit of a miss there. Like it makes me just curious how much responsibility is on the athlete versus on the coach. And I think it's a lot more on the athlete than the coach. But I also think at some point when you're talking about like the Olympic bronze medalist from the recent marathon, who's arguably getting ready for, you know, what she's been waiting for since she won that Olympic bronze medal to remake that marathon team.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like there might have been a way to stop it before it got so bad. Mm-hmm. But then I will just say that I felt like my heart just really felt for her for what it took and the cross training that she put into it with the hopes that she'd be able to race in February. I almost think it was somewhat delusional. I don't know. But like it might have just kept her sanity in place for the time being until she ultimately had to make that decision to do not start.
But I mean, Okay, so a couple of things to say about that. And so I do think that you know, whose responsibility is it? The athlete, is the coach? I do think that ultimately it's going to be the athlete's responsibility. And I think that's the reason why her, and not to circle back to my takeaway, but that's the reason why her self-concept as a grinder was one of the things that stood out to me. Because like if an athlete is talking to their coach and the athlete's like, no, I feel okay. Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit tired. I mean, there is some fatigue that goes with running a marathon. And if she's like putting a brave face on it and it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm tired, and the coach kind of has to take her at her word, right? And so I do think that thing about the her self-concept and pushing through and thinking, it's almost like an old school no pain, no gain mentality. I do think
yes,
that's worth considering.
Like, how far does no pain extend before your coach just shuts you down? Like, we're talking about broken parts of her body.
Yeah.
Not like a stress reaction, like broken.
Yeah. Yeah. She had a broken kneecap. And she actually got it from a fall, which is super frustrating. Which is just horrifying to me. The fact that she didn't get it from stress. She got it from trauma. But that actually gets into the other thing that I was thinking here. And you said, you know, is she delusional? I mean, Michelle, when you got COVID before Houston, you were like calling up your doctor friends and asking if you could still race Houston. And, you know, I mean, we all kind of suffer from some of that delusion, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so like, so that was another thing about it to me that really stood out is like, so often I feel like pros are different from us. You know, pro runners are different from us in terms of the pressures that they're under and what they have to face and the resources that they have and all sorts of other things. But I'm often reminded how similar pros are to us. I'm reading Kara Goucher's book right now. I've talked before about when I read Meb Keflezighi's books, one of his books, about how both of them are like struggling with injury and kind of holding things together so often, you know. And here she's basically kind of struggling with injuries and holding things together and trying to do everything she possibly can in order to try and make the starting line of her big target race. That feels really familiar to me.
Yeah.
You know, I did appreciate when she said that as soon as she realized that she had to cross train, that she wasn't really able to run, she got on the elliptigo and she said, quote, I'm going to Parker Volby the shit out of this thing. Just saying that she was going to get as fit as she possibly could, the way that Parker Volby does by being on the ARC trainer and cross training as many days as she runs, certainly. But yeah, she got PRP, platelet therapy. She got a PRP injection into her knee 2 weeks before the trials.
That is so hit or miss.
And like, still was holding out hopes to potentially run and perform well at the trials with a PRP injection into her knee 14 days ahead of time.
That's delusional, right? Like I mean,
it is, but it's also the things that legends are made of, right? I mean, what was the surgery that Joan Benoit had like 17 days before the 1984 trials?
That's exactly what I was thinking. She had knee surgery.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but it worked out. And it's almost like the negative that it worked out on the impact it has on others, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, if we would have, like, she talked about how harrowing all of December and January were with the cross training, and she was spending 8 hours a day in her chiropractor / massage therapist / physical therapist office, 8 hours a day getting worked on, right? And if that would have worked, we would have been like, holy cow, Molly Seidel, what a legend, right? I mean, would we?
Yes, but yeah.
And it would be a horrible
example. We might not know about
example.
All of this,
yeah. A horrible example for all of us that can't spend 8 hours a day.
Yeah, for sure. So that stood out to me too. Go ahead.
She has a podcast with her sister also, and she and Julia didn't talk about this at all. And I think that was intentional, but like, she also went through a major breakup during this December, January period of, you know, her partner that she's lived with really ever since she talked about going back into eating disorder recovery therapy, like, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years ago. So she had a lot of just really bad shit going on. Like, the timing is just so unfortunate, but I think like stress is stress and is stress, and this injury plus the personal turmoil. I mean, that's like, I don't know, maybe some legend here or there can overcome it, but it's probably like a 0.1% of people.
but perhaps we shouldn't see that as so potentially legendary is kind of my point. Like maybe we should see that as maybe not so positive after all. Do you know?
We
shouldn't lionize. Like, we should lionize Joan Benoit Samuelson for other reasons. And I do. Her picture is on the wall in my workout room. But maybe we shouldn't be lionizing her for doing something that was medically dodgy, right?
I would say, so let me go back to your original point a couple minutes ago where you said, like, you'd like to get my thoughts on, like, do I feel like that runner that has to push harder?
And
I would
grind.
Say yes. That I have to, I've always been that runner. You know, you knew who I ran with in high school.
Mm-hmm. And Andy Burns, baby.
Yeah.
Andy Talk Burns. About talent. Yeah.
Yeah. An absolute beast, right? And senior year States, he ran on a purple ankle. Like, perfect example of this.
It was his junior year. Yeah. He had twisted his ankle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was always fighting for third, fourth, and then sometimes fifth place. Like, that was my thing. So, like, I'm in, like, almost not scoring contention, you know, not usually on the edge of not being on the varsity squad, but I've always had to work so much harder. And, well, I felt like I did. And one thing I think it actually limited me at times. I was working so hard, I was actually not reaching the potential I could. And so that's something I've really tried to work with the athletes I work with on, and my own family, you know, my wife and daughter, like, backing off a little bit can actually help your performance. And myself, I told you, I'm a pretty bad coach of myself, but, you know, I've seen this. So yeah, I think that's the kind of persona I have.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece of this, though, is
me too. And I think that whenever I joke about the difference between George the athlete and George the coach, I think that's the difference, actually.
I agree 100%, because you look at yourself and you see less than you are, right? That's just mentally. And then, well, how do I make up that difference? I have to work harder, right? And my entire life is like that, at work, at home, you know, athletics, it's always like that. If I just worked harder, I would do better, you know? But then the second piece of this is the underdog, right? This is woven into the culture of the US.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, oh, we beat back Britain, right? You know, this is in our culture. You know, George,
young, scrappy, and hungry.
You and I went to Georgia Tech. Like, rooting for Georgia Tech is one of the hardest things in the world, unless you really enjoy watching golf, baseball, or women's volleyball, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult thing. My favorite English Premier League team is Arsenal. Like, they've had two really good seasons, but there's a lot of drought periods. But that's, like, woven into the U.S. culture of the underdog. And I think this injury, I'm going to push through it. This, God forbid I say this again, David Goggins attitude, right? Mind over matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm being a wimp if I ease off. That is, it's a tough thing to deal with. And it's impressive. I think it's impressive when somebody does it right,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't push themselves to the edge. I think it's actually impressive. It's more mentally difficult to do that than to apply the underdog, you know, beat down and I'm still going to fight attitude.
Mm-hmm. For sure. You know, it's funny. I ran the Disneyland half marathon a couple months ago, as you all know, 6 weeks or so ago. When I finished, I did it as a progression run, and I was happy with how I ran. I ran pretty fast in the back half and was psyched about it, had fun, enjoyed the race. And afterwards felt pretty good. You know, it was the longest run I had done at that point since the Berlin Marathon, but I felt pretty good. I wasn't like wrecked at the finish line. And I was texting with my coach and she said, yeah, you don't have to be wrecked at every finish line. And that has like stuck in my wife's mind. She's like, you don't have to be wrecked all the time, George. And I'm like, okay, you're right, you know, and I think that's kind of an important thing to do. As an athlete, I kind of feel like it's important to wreck myself, like, often. And you do need to do that from time to time, certainly, undoubtedly. But the idea that that every single time you're toeing the line and it's not an easy day, that you need to wreck yourself, you actually don't have to do that. Or it's not necessary for me to do that to actually be able to compete with the people that I consider to be more talented than me. We should also mention here, another takeaway from my talking about all the various things, is that she said that she did have to call up all of her, like when she decided to drop out of the Olympic Trials Marathon, she had to call up all of her sponsors and tell them. She had to call up her family and tell them. And her family actually, she said it was a tough conversation because her family didn't get to go to Tokyo, didn't get to see her in Japan. And because of that, they were excited about the possibility of seeing her in Paris this summer, right? And she said that was a tough conversation. She said that her sponsors, though, were all really cool about it. And she said, in particular, Puma has been fantastic, which just makes me that much happier that I am currently wearing Puma pants, Puma socks, and Puma shoes.
Just remember who wore them first.
So you, absolutely. You turned me on to Puma, undoubtedly. I will give you all the credit for that, for sure. For sure. Next thing I want to talk about, she talked about was she talked about how, okay, so she did the race. She stayed off of social media because she said she was really going to be sad that she didn't get to race, that she just wanted to actually just have a race experience. And she said something to the effect of like, I'd rather not make the team and be mentally good than have made it and not be healthy. And she said, quote, it takes that experience of getting everything you wanted and still being miserable and hating yourself and realizing that it doesn't fix anything to realize that me running the Olympic trials doesn't change that. Yeah. She said, I'm finally at a place where I'm happy where I'm at. And I hear her on that, but I'm wondering, and like I said, I'm reading Kara Goucher's book right now too. And so this is making me think of it. A little bit more. Kara Goucher did a lot of things that were mentally and physically unhealthy as well during the time when she was in her peak performance. And I'm wondering, how do I say this in a way that's not awful? And
you
I'm
have
wondering
to be a little mentally unhealthy if you're an Olympian.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I mean, do you need to be, because you take physical risks, do you also need to take some mental risks in order to be an Olympian?
So I think with everything we know in the last, you know, maybe the last two quads of just mental health and athletes. And even, I don't know if you read Andre Agassi's book, but a lot of these people at the top are just miserable.
Yeah.
Like, yes,
Michael Phelps has talked a lot about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like how many Olympic gold medalists just, you know, like that Olympic gold medal arguably is worse for their mental health than not being an Olympic gold medalist to an extent. And I think for so many of them, you have to like cross that threshold, so to speak, at some point, probably, of going beyond just, you know, the physical limits of what your body can do. Like eventually you push your mind too far also, I think. But I just think that there's a part of that that is just sport and being, you know, the best in the world or the best in the country at what you do. I don't know. I'm not saying it's right. I just think it's what we see.
A few years ago, a book came out by a woman named Christine Ashwaden. It's called Good to Go, and it was about recovery. And one of the macro themes of that book was that pro athletes do things that amateur athletes shouldn't do. Such as like get surgeries or various kind of dodgy recovery methods and things like that, that will endanger their long-term health, but help them get one or two more seasons out of their bodies. Because if they can get one or two more seasons out of their bodies, that's tens of millions of dollars potentially, right? And so they say, when you see a professional basketball player, professional football player, professional baseball player do certain things, you shouldn't necessarily do that because you have a different set of considerations they do. They're just trying to make it one more season, whereas you're trying to recover well so you can be a lifelong athlete. Do you see what I'm saying? And I thought that was a really interesting theme and really interesting point in that book. And it just has me wondering, is that kind of part of being a professional athlete? That being a professional athlete, sometimes you do have to sacrifice your long-term physical health in order for short-term physical gain. Maybe is it mentally the same?
It's sort of like a risk reward thing, right? The risk of us doing that is pretty high and the reward is very low. The risk of a professional athlete doing that is still high, but the reward
right.
can be a once in a lifetime thing. Like
it can be,
we just
it
talked
can
about
be an Olympic
Joan
medal.
Benoit.
It could be an Olympic
Yeah.
medal.
Not just an Olympic medal, Joan Benoit, the first
yeah, it'd be a
women's
gold. Yeah.
marathon Olympic gold,
right?
That so the reward there was so much higher than any of us, like the three of us, can imagine. I would venture to guess most or all of our listeners. So I'd say, like, it's almost like, you know, stock trading, right? It's the same thing. It's a risk reward thing, and you've got to figure out where you find yourself on that spectrum. So
Michelle, I mean, what do you think? Is it worth, and is it kind of part of the expectation we have that you do mentally unhealthy things for short-term gain and then go back and fix your mental problems later? I mean, is the system set up for that? And is that a necessary thing that you have to do?
I think there's only a few
people
who have, I think there's only probably, I think it's few and far between the people who've gone through the system in whatever their sport is that haven't crossed that line. Is it supposed to be set up like that? I'm sure it's not like the intention, right? I'm sure like these governing bodies of whatever sport, they don't want their athletes to be like in this form of, you know, mental space. But I just think it takes a certain level of how much are you willing to hurt mentally, physically, emotionally, you know, to be the best at what you're going to do. It doesn't bother me. I think it's like, you know, pay to play. I think it's just part of the puzzle. I think the sooner an athlete gets a handle on it and they have a team in place to support them, you know, the less out of control perhaps it could be. I think we're seeing a lot more of that now, even at the college level, a lot more emphasis on sports psychology within, especially within like Division I departments, athletic departments.
Yeah.
I happen to agree 100% with Michelle in that whether it's right, wrong, indifferent, at least the current trend is towards building teams around these athletes to not allow that type of thing to happen. I think that's where you were going, right, Michelle?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. And yeah, it also has me, of course, thinking about what damage have I done to myself? I know the damage I've done to myself physically in order to achieve, but it does have me wondering what mental damage I might have done to myself over the course of the past 3 decades. But that's something for me to continue considering. Last thing, let's kind of talk about where she wrapped up. She said she's feeling super experimental now. She's totally changing things up, she said. She said she's trying to put herself in situations that spark growth, she says. She was kind of playing it close to the vest, but at one point she did whisper 10K on the track, but she's going to try and go back to running a little bit on the track. She did say, and I appreciate this, she talked about running trail race. She said, every time I finish a trail race, I tell myself I'm never doing another goddamn trail race. And then I find myself signing up for another trail race the next year. And then she also referred to downhill running. She said, downhill running, it's the stupidest thing. which I'm inclined to agree with. Yeah. Michelle, what do you think she, like I said, she's kind of playing it close to the vest. She did suggest she's going to run a 10K on the track. What do you think? What's the rumor mill saying about how she's experimentally doing things differently here?
Yeah. Well, I'm not one to like follow people's training on Strava. So I don't know if she went back to Strava. I don't even know really what her run situation looks like right now. But I think if she can get her legs underneath her and, you know, she thinks that she has a chance to get a qualifier for USA's for the 10K, I do think we'll see her on the track this spring. She has nothing to lose. There's no reason for her not to do it. If anything, I don't think any coach out there can argue against sometimes going back into like, you know, these lower, shorter distances, speed cycles. Although I think the 100-meter, 400-meter runners would laugh at, you know, thinking of a 10K as a speed cycle, but for her it is, right? Like, so I think it just remains to be seen. I don't know if she's entered in V10. That's basically the first time that we're going to see people chase the USA and Olympic standard and outdoor track this spring. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think if she can get her legs under her and she feels good, I do think we'll see her on a track at some point. There's so few opportunities in the United States to chase the trials qualifier for the 10K. So I don't know if she's going to have to go overseas, but she did just take a 3-week trip. She went to Switzerland for 2 weeks with her sister and brother, and then she is in Germany for a week doing kind of some stuff with Puma. So maybe she's just getting some base training in her, but I don't think she's hopped into any crazy training cycle yet. But it's only March 6th. You know, these right. people can they can turn things around pretty quickly. So I think we're going to see a number of people who either didn't run in the Olympic marathon trials or had a disappointing race just try to get a track qualifier, because why the hell not, right? Like, so I think she's in that field. So
right on. Very good. Very good. It is, I think, from time to time, good to hear what's going through the mind of a professional athlete, a professional runner. And I do appreciate the fact that she has been, over the course of the past several years, very forthright and very open about who she is and the struggle she faces and that sort of thing. And I think that's been worthwhile for me to follow, and I appreciate y'all discussing with me. Michelle, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, glad
you're yesterday. Feeling better. I hope you continue to feel better. Hope you don't have to take that sweatshirt back off again.
Thanks.
Eric, thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah, it's always fun. Appreciate you too having me on the podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast. Don't forget to check out our new website that we're building in early 2024, mostpleasantexhaustion.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pleasantpodcast or on Instagram at mostpleasantexhaustion. We're available on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tell your friends and don't forget to give us a rating. We also offer coaching services through MPE Coaching. You can reach out to us at pleasantpodcast@gmail.com, at mpecoach@gmail.com, or just click on the coaching link on the podcast website. Again, that's www.mostpleasantexhaustion.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Blue Pineapple Travel. You can find them at bluepineappletravel.com, at facebook.com/bluepineappletravel, or on Instagram at bluepineappletravel. Check out High Echelon PC at highecheloncpa.com. Big thanks to our sponsor, Elemental Altitude. You can find them at elementalaltitude.com, on Instagram at Elemental Altitude, or on Facebook at facebook.com/elementalaltitude. And finally, thanks to our newest sponsor, Bright Hair. You can find them at brighthair.com or on Instagram at bright.hair. On behalf of Michelle Frank and Eric Hall, thanks for listening to the Most Pleasant Exhaustion podcast.